Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 268. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to a destination that Lonely Planet says is the number one place you should visit in 2011, Albania. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, if you're a smoker, there's bad news for you, but good news for non-smokers. Over 1,200 lodgings in the United States, 1,200 and 900 according to a recent survey, have gone smoke-free. One of the reasons is the call for non-smokers' rights. The other is the decline in people in the U.S. who smoke, which is now down to 1 in 5. But you also have to believe that this has some advantages for hotels who will have lower costs because of the cleaning charges related to people who smoke. Delta has decided that the owner of a kitten who died while being transported in the cargo hold is due $50. So apparently, Delta is putting the value of a kitten's life at $50. You can imagine that this may cause some controversy. And then speaking of controversy, this episode, as I said, is going to be about Albania. Since we recorded this episode and the airing of it, there have been violent protests in Albania where 3 people at least have died. So if you're going to take our advice and go to Albania, as this episode will be saying, please make sure you check in the conditions there before you go. Links for all 3 of these stories can be found at the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Francis Tepon, who's coming to us from Slovenia, but come to talk to us about Albania. Francis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Chris.
And Francis is coming to us from wanderlearn.com. And Francis, why should we go to Albania?
Well, one reason, actually, for those who are interested in Lonely Planet's opinion, they put it as the number one destination for 2001. So I think right there, it can't suck that badly if it's number one on Lonely Planet's list for 2001.
And before we started recording, when Francis and I started talking about that, I recalled that Boots and All also had it on their top 10 list, and it turns out Boots and All had it as number 2. So I have never been to Albania. I can find it on a map, although for the sake of those people who can't, where would we find Albania?
It's basically right across. If you're looking at the boot of Italy, you look to the right, basically east. And there it is. And kind of stuck in the Balkans, just north of Greece and south of Croatia and Montenegro.
And it wasn't that many years ago where we couldn't go to Albania.
That's right. It was a totally closed society in 1990, before 1990, and really, really closed, kind of like North Korea closed.
Right.
And because of that, that's why it makes such a fun and interesting travel destination, because it was closed so long, so it really kind of created this exotic, unique culture. If you imagine if all of a sudden North Korea opened up now, it would be a really interesting, bizarre place to visit. And kind of Albania has a little bit of it. It's been 20 years, but still, you can see the shadow and the remnants of that period. So it's also got a language and a culture that's completely unrelated to anything else in Europe. Albanian language has basically nothing to do with Europe. A lot of their culture, it really feels like another planet in some ways. That's what makes it quite interesting.
And if we were to go to Albania, what kind of itinerary would you recommend? We're not talking about a big country.
No, it's just a bit smaller than Maryland, so it's quite small. But on the same time, the infrastructure is not great. The infrastructure is kind of weak. So as a result, you can't cross it as fast as you can cross Maryland.
You haven't been in some of the highways in Maryland during rush hour, but so should we home base in the capital city? Should we try different places? What did you do, or what would you recommend for someone who has, say, a week to 2 weeks to see Albania rather than a long period of time?
I agree that you'd probably want to spend at least a few days or home base it in Tirana because it is pretty central to the whole country. At the same time, though, the south of Albania is a bit difficult to get to. So I would, if I were you, I would kind of plan to have a few days in a hotel or wherever your lodging is down in the south as well, because it's worth seeing, but it's definitely not a day trip out of Tirana.
And I'm going to have you say the capital one more time. You'll notice how I cleverly managed to avoid saying it the first time. Tirana?
Tirana, Tirana.
I was not sure how to pronounce it. Okay.
T. Tirana is the capital, and it wasn't always the capital. A long time ago, it was Durrës, which is right on the coast. But because it's so easy for anybody to attack a coastal city and take over basically the country, they decided long ago to move it to Tirana, which is more inland.
Okay. And if we start there in the capital, what should we see there first?
Well, the capital itself is, you know, they put a nice coat of paint on it. And so it looks a little bit better than the Soviet style. It was kind of communistic, had a very closed version of communism. They didn't even want to have relations with the Soviet Union. In fact, they had relations with China, and then eventually they broke off relations with China. So they were really completely independent as a kind of a communist system. So it was had the typical ugly buildings that you have, but they really kind of livened it up with a coat of paint. So go around Tirana. It's interesting. They have plenty of museums and that kind of stuff. But I think the most interesting parts of Albania are outside the capital itself.
And is there anything in terms of context? Are there any history museums or things that we should hit, or cathedrals or mosques or anything in Tirana before we leave the capital?
The main museum that's right in the main square is actually worth seeing, and it's pretty cheap to go there as well. Their national museum, and so I think that's a good introduction, and it's cheap. The other thing that's actually kind of a day trip from it is a place called Kruje. Kruje is kind of the ancient place where is the castle of Skanderberg. Skanderberg is the mythical George Washington, if you will, of Albania. He was the founding father back in the 15th century, so this is a while ago. But there they have also kind of long, long history of where Albanians feel like that's where the heart and soul of the country is in that sense. So that's kind of a short day trip. And their museum is also interesting. You can, again, see a lot of their visions of Albania. For example, one of the things that concerns people that kind of politically is the whole idea of the greater Albania. And you go to these museums and you can really show how they emphasize that Albanians live on other parts of what today is Macedonia and Kosovo and even parts of Montenegro. They're overflowing into these other countries, and they really kind of emphasize that through some of the graphics in the museums themselves.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the museum is cheap. My impression is, and especially since we found this on both The Lonely Planet and Boots and All lists here, that we're talking about a place that is relatively inexpensive and a good backpacker destination.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. I mean, you can also stay in a hotel. I stayed in one hotel in Tirana, and I think it was about $25. And it was, I don't know how many stars it was, probably just one star, but it was quite nice and fully affordable, and it's right in the center of the city. So, of course, now with Lonely Planet giving it the number one status, I'm sure they're going to go up, but still quite affordable. And especially getting around, if you want to take one of the cheapest train rides in Europe, it's definitely in Albania. They're very slow. A lot of the trains don't have toilets, but they kind of poke along a little bit faster than you can run. But they'll get you there, and they'll get you there for cheap.
Okay. And where should we go next?
I think one of the best parts is the Ionian coast, which is the south part of Albania. They have some really interesting untouched beaches, and so that I would put high on the list. And at the very, very bottom of Albania, where you're practically in Greece, you can go to Butrint, which is a, how can I put it? It's like a layered city, a layered of history, if you will. So, for example, you have it founded by the Greeks in the 6th century B.C., and then came the Romans, and they left a few monuments. And then came some Christians who left a few basilicas and churches from the 6th century and the 9th century. And then finally came the Venetians. And what's fascinating is this place is tiny. It takes you just a few hours to walk around it, but it's geographically, it's tiny. And yet, it's one of the few places in the world where you can actually find all these different parts of history right next to each other. Usually what happens is, you know, you raise something, you totally destroy it, and then you build your brand new structure on top of it. And so then these layers of histories are buried deep under the soil. But in this case, they just build next to these things. So you have kind of, you're kind of going through time in a very short area. And that's, to me, it was a really fascinating place. It's another UNESCO site in Albania.
Excellent. You say another UNESCO site. I missed what the first one was.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't mention it. But there's a few of them.
That would help me.
Yeah, there's at least three others that I know of. The town of Berat. Berat is in the south, again, on your way down. They call it the City of a Thousand Windows because it's built on a hill, old city. On the top, it's got an old fort or fortress, and people are actually living there. And it's quite pretty and picturesque. It's great for photographers who like it there. There's also Lake Ohrid. Ohrid is a lake right that's shared with Macedonia. And so it's 50-50 in both, and that's another UNESCO site. And then also, this one's a tough one for me to pronounce, but it's called Hirokastad. It's a town I haven't actually been to, but I know they have a castle that's kind of foreboding there. I've never had a chance to actually go see it, but I know it's a UNESCO site as well.
Excellent. Now, you talked about that Albania still has some shadows of when it was cut off, when it had a unique culture. What sort of things did you see that gave you that impression?
It's more like what I didn't see, roads.
Okay.
The roads are probably the crappiest in Europe. I mean, lots of dirt roads, big potholes. You know, you're going for a bumpy ride. However, that is changing quite fast. In fact, the last time I was there, just about a year or so ago, they had just built, I mean, you could practically still smell the tar. They had just built a highway along the coast. And so now it's quite easy to go along the coast. Before, it was pathetic. And one of the reasons is because of the remnants of communism. It was illegal to have a car.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. So nobody had a car, except for the party.
Interesting. So you weren't just recommending to go to the train. You were recommending not to drive, at least in much of Albania. It's not someplace that you want to rent a car and go explore on your own, maybe along the coast right now.
That's right. I would never get a car in Albania.
Okay. Although, as you say, that's changing rapidly. Okay. Interesting.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, if you know you want to just do the coast, that's okay.
One of the questions I ask, and I'm interested for Albania, when did you feel closest to home, and when did you feel furthest from home?
When I felt farthest from home was when I went to this hotel that was abandoned, totally gutted, empty, and I went ahead and camped on the fourth floor. Had a great view, had an absolutely spectacular view, and I was completely alone. There was nobody around, and yet the only thing that was notable, the only thing that set it apart, actually, was the bunkers that are around. In fact, I think that, I don't know how many bunkers they have in Albania, but it's in the hundreds of thousands. And so if you keep your eye out, it took me a while first to discover where they were, but you'll see them almost everywhere. Just kind of while you're driving, pay attention while you're on a bus or on a train, you'll see bunkers everywhere. And basically, there was this wild idea that Enver Hoxha, who was the leader of Albania, he said, oh, I'm going to make these bunkers that are basically bomb-proof. And the guy who invented them, he in fact told him, go get in the bunker, and we're going to drop a bomb on you to make sure it works. So, and the guy came out with his ears ringing that he survived. And so the guy said, okay, great, they work. So we're going to put these bunkers everywhere because he believed that, okay, we're going to be completely independent of everybody. So if the Soviet Union wants to invade us, fine, we'll be ready for them. If America wants to invade us, we'll be ready for them. But because they're so difficult to destroy, you can't even move them. So Albanians decide just to leave them there because it's going to be much, much more expensive to try to remove them. So there they are everywhere. And you can camp in them if you feel like it. Huh. I think a lot of Albanians lose their virginity in these bunkers.
Okay.
So the locals tell me.
And then closest to home?
Closest to home has to be probably Tirana, just because it's the most civilized part of Albania. And so I felt the people on the street They don't look strange. They look totally normal. In fact, the only thing that's different, I think, one thing, even in the center of Albania, is people are very physical. In other words, when you ask for direction, they will grab your arm and, like, kind of pull you over and say, okay, this is, go over here, look over there. They'll pull you, and they'll get really close to you. They're not shy at all. They're very social people, and so they're super friendly. I'll give you an example. I was walking on the beach, in around the south, and this man who was probably about 65, 67 years old, he saw me, and you know, there was nobody else anywhere, and he just kind of walked up to me, and I just said, hi, you know, but I don't speak any Albanian. And then he didn't speak any English at all, and yet he tried to converse with me the whole time, just trying to communicate somehow. And we did, you know, using gestures. And eventually he kind of said, you know, follow me this way, kind of, he's not saying any words in English. And I follow him, and he has this little hut, and he invites me to have some rakia, which is a strong alcoholic spirit. And we sit down there and we kind of drink. I don't drink alcohol, but I took a sip anyway, just out of politeness. But this is potent stuff.
A paint thinner, actually, I believe, yeah.
That's right. It does taste like paint thinner, I think. And eventually he invited me to his house for tea. And before you know it, I was actually sleeping, crashing on his couch. And I met him and his wife. I mean, eventually I got this into my head. I said, well, maybe you speak Russian because of, you know, how old he was, and maybe he learned Russian.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He did. He did know some Russian, and I know just a very little Russian. So that's how we kind of communicated in really, really bad, broken Russian. But it was fascinating. That just shows you the hospitality of the people. I call them the friendliest people in Europe, actually, because they're just everywhere you go, they're incredibly helpful. In fact, I couch surfed with a Latvian who was living in Tirana, in the capital. And I asked her, why did you pick Albania to come here? You know, what attracted you? And she said, the people. That's why I went, because they're just so incredibly friendly. I just want to be around so much positive energy.
Interesting. I'm amused, too, by your story of speaking Russian. It's useful to know, and surprising sometimes, which language you'll use in a situation. Obviously, the local language. But I ended up one time speaking Italian to somebody in Mexico City because he was an opera singer, and we were running out of words in Spanish. So...
That's right, yeah. And then speaking about Italian, actually, that is the second language of Albania.
Oh, interesting, because it's so close. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And not only that, but Italy actually controlled it for several periods of history.
Venice, I would assume.
Yeah, so, and the other thing is that during that close time period of Albania, they could get the radio and TV signals from Italy.
Oh,
and
sure.
So, of course, people, they would pick up these signals, the radio and TV signals, and watch Italian television or listen to Italian radio. And if you do that all day, eventually you're going to pick up some Italian. So that's what happened.
Interesting. Huh.
So that is, if you go to Albania and you don't worry about not speaking Albanian, they're probably not going to speak much English, but definitely almost everybody speaks a little bit of Italian.
Interesting. Now, were you using a guidebook to get around? I know Lonely Planet has something for everybody, but I can't think there are a lot of guidebooks yet for Albania.
Yeah, I used a Lonely Planet guidebook.
Okay. And were there things that you would disagree with them? They recommended going here and you didn't find it so interesting, or they should really add this to the guidebook for the next edition?
Yeah, I would say that the one thing that they leave out in the guidebook of Lonely Planet and in most guidebooks is the way I got there. I was in Kosovo in a place called Beja, or Bitch, as they say in Serbian, and I wanted to get somehow to Albania. And I took a very roundabout way of getting there, but it was actually super cool, and they don't even talk about it at all. You go to Jagovica, which is in Kosovo, and then from there I took this kind of really bumpy ride to get onto this ferry, and the ferry then goes on for like $2 or $3. You go down to the Drina, or the Drini, depending on who you're talking to, but anyway, it's their biggest, longest river. And you go through this canyon. And so here they are. You're in the middle of the Albanian Alps, which are these huge snow-capped mountains. Well, I was there in March. They were filled with snow. And yet you're going through this kind of canyon, and it feels like you're on a riverboat cruise through Yosemite. I mean, it's just incredible, the scenery around you. And it's so cheap. It was just like less than, you know, $5 for sure by now. It's probably still less. And a couple hours, and then from there they drop you off and they take another kind of crazy road, bumpy road, and you're gyrating all over the place, and eventually get to a place called Shkodra. Shkodra is the northernmost city in Albania, and it has this, I think it's called the Rozafa Castle. It's right on the top of Shkodra. It has this beautiful view. It's got the biggest lake in the Balkans. It's not super cool, but it's quite nice. to see that. But I'd say that that Drini River ride was something that a lot of guidebooks had left out.
Okay. We talked about places to see. Anything that we should do or taste that is really essential to understanding Albania?
Well, the bureks are the Balkan food, and you see it all the time. And they also have dolmas, which are quite popular all over the Balkans. Mm-hmm. Their main food is lamb. They're big in lambs and kebabs and that kind of stuff. The one thing I'd probably mention is something you should not eat, and that is the koran fish, which is in Lake Ohrid, because it's basically a near-extinct endangered species in Lake Ohrid, which is that UNESCO lake. It's an enormous lake. In Macedonia, it's illegal to fish it, but in Albania, it's not illegal to fish it. And so they go ahead and fish it, and then you can go buy it and actually eat it locally there in Albania. But it's something that you probably, to be a responsible tourist, should not eat. And so just remember, you know, Quran, you know, Muslim, that fish, don't eat that fish.
Interesting. Okay. One thing that made you laugh and say, only in Albania.
I think there was a couple of points that just come to mind. One was when I was lost in the streets of Tirana. I was staying with a couchsurfer, and you know, they don't have numbers and they don't have street names a lot of the times. Even in the capital city, it's kind of hard to navigate. And I was getting home at night. I didn't remember how to get my way home, and that was a terrible thing. I didn't have an address. I didn't know anything, and I was just wandering by memory. And eventually, I started talking with these little, you know, these children who are on the street at like 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night. And eventually, I had about an army of children, you know, about 10 of them running around, you know, looking for all sorts of houses, talking to the older people. Where's this house? You know, this is, and they're trying to describe the house. And, you know, only a couple of them spoke enough English. And just basically, long story short, half an hour worth of effort, and, you know, eventually got a few adults involved. And eventually, an adult said, I think I know where it is, and just stay here, have a coffee, and I'm going to go get there. And then eventually, it all got solved. But basically, it shows that kind of friendliness and outgoingness that the Albanian people have. And also, it says something else. It says about the safety of, you know, here you are in a capital city, and a lot of times capital cities are the most dangerous places of a country. And yet, you know, the kids are running around at 10 o'clock at night without any supervision. You know, it's completely safe. And so people have, I think Americans have visions of Albania being, or even Europeans do, of being kind of an unsafe, dangerous place and that kind of stuff. But it's totally not. It's quite tame. The other part that kind of reminded me only of Albania was kind of funny was when I was in the south, after camping in that beach, I was hitchhiking and to try to get out. And the first guy picks me up in a kind of a sleek kind of sports car, which kind of, wow, that's not really normal. Get in. And the guy's got dark sunglasses and that kind of stuff. And he says, come on in. He speaks very good English and French and Italian too, all these languages. He turns out to be the head of the police department. He's just off duty right now, and he was going to work. And he, afterwards, you know, he's just like, here's my phone number. If you have any problems, give me a call. But it was just a great moment again. And all sorts of people will help you in one way or another.
What was the biggest surprise? We're talking about a country that's going to have a few surprises.
This had a lot of surprises. And the reason is that I spent about 3 years wandering around Eastern Europe. And I spent a lot of time, about half of it, in the Balkans. And before I ever got to Albania, I really was curious about it. And so I heard all sorts of stories from their Balkan neighbors, from Serbia, Montenegro, from Slovenia, all of them. And he told me so many things like, you know, everybody there wears white hats, you know, there's a lot of theft going on, they all have 10 children, they're fanatical Muslims, and they only speak Albanian, blah, blah, blah. All sorts of, you know, kind of prejudices. And I discovered almost nobody wears white hats. Super honest, I left my backpack with somebody and said, I'll come back in 2 hours, and it was still there. Didn't feel like a Muslim society where, you know, there's lots of sexy girls running around on the streets. And in fact, most people are atheists. It was the only atheist state in the world for about 25 years or something like that. Even though it's officially 70% Muslim, nobody really cares. And I would ask everybody I met, how many children do you have? And most people had two or three children, you know, if they were young, they had only one or two siblings. And so all these myths were just completely shattered one after another. To me, that would really open up my eyes, and I just couldn't believe that.
Interesting. You talked about going around in Eastern Europe, or what's now again Central Europe, for a number of years. You've also got a book coming out, I believe.
That's right, yeah. I've got one book. It's called Hike Your Own Hikes, Seven Life Lessons from Backpacking Across America. That was my first. But right now I'm working on The Hidden Europe, What Eastern Europeans Can Teach Us. And so basically, after 3 years of wandering around these 25 countries, I try to collect the lessons from each thing, the good, the bad, and the ugly, everything that they do and that is interesting and unique and something that they do better than us. That's kind of the concluding part of every chapter. You know, these are a few things, these takeaways that, you know, what can Romanians do that are better? What do Estonians do, Albanians and Ukrainians? What can Americans learn from all these different cultures and countries? And so basically 25 chapters, 25 countries, and cover them all.
Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, do you have anything else we should know before we strap on our backpack or pack up the suitcase and go to Albania?
Yeah, three things, I think. One is, I forgot to mention, it's a surprising thing, was the fact that they don't call themselves Albania. They call themselves like Shqipëria. Every other country calls them something that sounds more or less like Albania, except for them. So that's kind of a surprising fact. And second of all is, I think it's also very useful whenever you go, how to say thank you. And so that's falemënderit. Go ahead, say it, Chris.
Could I hear it one more time?
Falemënderit.
With an F? Falemënderit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Falemënderit. Falemënderit. And so that's a useful thing. And the third thing I would say is just visit wanderlearn.com if you have a chance.
Cool. Last two questions. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Albania when what?
When the whole world is out there trying to help you in one way or another, even though you barely speak anything but their language.
I would have to say the picture of the flock of kids trying to help you get back to your house is going to be the one that stays with me from this particular episode.
Sure.
And then if you had to summarize Albania in three words, what three words would you use?
Friendly.
Okay.
Unique. Uh-huh. Diverse.
Diverse. Okay.
Diverse food. Because of the geography, it's got it all. I was sitting on a beach once, and I had snow on the mountains right next to me. It was crazy. And it's just next to each other and without a shirt on the beach. Crazy.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Francis Tapon, who's come to us from wanderlearn.com, and I'll put a link to his website in the show notes. Francis, thanks so much for coming and sharing with us a little information about Albania.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
In news of the community this week, I have some recommendations from listeners who listened to some of the past shows about things that you may want to see. The first one comes from Eric, who was on the show talking about national parks, and this is his comment on the Black Hills of South Dakota episode. One thing I would like to add as a national park aficionado myself, back when I visited the Black Hills in May of 2006, I booked a tour for the Minuteman Missile National Historic Site. This tour left everyone in their own personal cars from a small visitor center near the entrance to Badlands National Park and tours a Cold War era bunker and missile silo site. I've been to a lot of national park sites, but this is one of the most unique. When I visited, it was just starting up. Then I was told the tours have limited space and do book up fast. I booked mine almost a month in advance. I think this tour would be interesting to anyone who lived through that period in history. Very interesting. And then I heard from Mary, who commented on the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania episode. As a native of Pennsylvania, I was quite intrigued by the topic of this episode. Surprisingly, I have not yet made it to Pittsburgh. Now I have some more places to add to my itinerary. Here are a couple places that are drawing me to Pittsburgh, but were not highlighted in this very informative episode. The Mattress Factory, Museum of Contemporary Art, including James Turrell's Play on Light, and the National Aviary, America's Bird Zoo, which features 600 species of birds and interactive programs, including some that are geared towards children. Very interesting, Mary. I did not know that either. And then we also heard from Carrie in New York City, who commented on the episode 89 on the Galapagos Islands. I lived in Ecuador for 2 years and have been to the Galapagos quite a few times. If you like the area, you should check out La Isla de la Plata. They call it the poor man's Galapagos because it has most of the same animals as the Galapagos, but it isn't as touristy or expensive. They also offer super cheap scuba diving classes there. I think $300 for 1 week of instruction plus PADI certification. Love your blog and good luck in your travels. I really do appreciate when listeners of the show, as these three do, comment on the episode. All of these were left as comments at amateurtraveler.com and add some value. And I think you'd have to say that all three of those listeners did.
With that, we're going to end this episode of the Amateur Traveler Podcast. If you have any questions, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be